Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. It is my great honor to welcome Dr. Rajiv Fernando, who is one of our Compassionate Leaders Circle award recipients. He was one of the first people to receive the annual Compassionate Leaders Circle Award. And he is talking to us from Ukraine today, which is astounding. He has so many hats that he wears, but today he's here as the founder of Shirag, an amazing organization, and here as my friend. And we want to help tell your story and amplify what you're doing. So welcome, Rajiv.
Laurel, thank you for having me. It's truly an honor to be here. And, I've been in this compassionate leadership circle, and I learned so much from all of you. So thank you again for having me.
Of course. I think there's just mutual respect and love here. So when I met you, you were helping with the COVID crisis, and now you're helping with another crisis. So, and you and your organization do so much, but why don't you go back a little bit and tell me how you were drawn to medicine and just supporting people in general, and tell me about your organization, and then we'll talk more about where you are today.
Of course. So my love for medicine really started with my love for humanity. I was growing up, and I was initially growing up in India. I was growing up in the States. My parents decided to move me to India, to a more conservative region, to pursue my education. And my first instant when I got to India, I noticed a stark contrast between growing up in New York City to very rural India, small places, small towns in India. And interestingly enough, my first time that I actually really felt a compelling need to do medicine was when I encountered children with leprosy. It's not seen in the United States. And leprosy is an infectious disease which affects the nerve endings. And what happens then is the children lack sensation in their fingers, their toes. And very frequently these, because of lack of sensation, they're actually eaten up by rodents and things like that. So they have bad deformities in their fingers and toes. And this is what really drew me to medicine. It was just not the fact that I wanted to help, but humanity was involved. It was such a stark contrast that I saw as a middle class, upper middle class person who, if I got the condition, I would be able to afford the medicine. But seeing someone on the street without that kind of basic money at hand, how they would suffer. So it was just a stark contrast, and medicine just became the obvious thing to do. Infectious disease is amongst the top killers of people around the world in third world countries, if I may use that term. And that's I knew immediately that's what I had to do. So very, very early in life, I had my calling.
And that's an amazing story. And, I've met a lot of people, because I'm in the States, who came from India and are in the States, or families brought them to the States. I find it fascinating that your parents wanted to go back home.
Yeah, it was an interesting transition for me. Like I said, first of all, they promised me that I'm obviously a U.S. citizen. We come back for summers, we come back for Christmas, but I didn't understand that as a child when I moved there. I found it very difficult in the States, in India, to catch up with the education system. In New York, I was doing very well, school, double promotion, things like that. But it was a very different situation in India. It was very difficult, but I, through a lot of hard work, I finally found my way. And I often tell people it is a privilege and honor to practice medicine. As one of the things I see, Laurel, is whenever I travel around the world, kids frequently grab my stethoscope and they say, I want to be a doctor. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's a beautiful smile that they have. But sometimes I know in my heart that this may not be possible based on the resources that these children have. Many kids, for example, that I see, they are just pumping water at home. They do not have the facilities to go to school. And I realize that this dream may not really happen. So I take every minute of practicing medicine very seriously, and I'm very privileged and honored to practice medicine. And that's what keeps me going. I love my work. Being in difficult circumstances like Ukraine doesn't matter to me. I still get up with that energy, the smile, whether I wake up in New York or in Ukraine, it doesn't matter. I mean, my role in medicine is defined, and I just have to find a way to make it happen.
Well, I think we can all learn from you on keeping your center no matter where you are. So let's talk about where you are now. You're in the middle of a very difficult war zone, and tell us why you're there and what you're doing.
So on the war started on the 24th, and on the 28th, I had taken my first flight here. And I didn't have a plan. I'm going to be very honest with you. I just knew that I had a set of skills that could be useful for people who are suffering with medical conditions. And I had an insight for that. I had no plan whatsoever. My only plan was to get to Ukraine and figure it out. I did not know the language. I took my own finances with me and off I went headed to Ukraine. As soon as I got to Ukraine, fortunately, people welcomed me and they said there would be a role for me. It'll only be the nights, for starters. The night shifts are the ones which are unfilled and cold, brutal weather. And that they said, that's what we need you to do. I said, absolutely. So as I was entering Ukraine, I was stopped and they said, listen, the real problem we have right now is at that Polish border of Ukraine. Thousands, tens of thousands of people were crossing over into Ukraine. Many people had injuries during the war and traveling 16, 17 hours, some people on foot. And these people had a lot of injuries that's what needed help. So don't go into Ukraine, stay at the border and start working with these people. And I said, absolutely, whatever is necessary. That's where I started in refugee medicine. So we worked there during the nights and we started helping people. Humanitarian efforts are very important. People often forget that in medicine. For example, one of the things we do over here, we've done a few of them, is a holiday toy drive. And there are many humanitarian organizations bringing things, giving things. But I said, well, what about the children? Who's thinking about these kids? The children haven't had chocolate in 8 months, no toys, nothing. So I think that's really important for a physician or anyone to have that human touch. So when we had children coming through beyond treating their illness, and physical injuries, we always gave them simple things like hot chocolate and something just to get that smile out. I mean, these children, Laurel, they've been traumatized for months. I mean, literally like in and out of shelters the whole day. Many of the schools have been bombed. They can't attend. Other schools which are ready to function don't have bomb shelters, which makes it not possible to go to school. Children are really suffering here. And these are some of the things that really drew me into, you know, staying here, the absolute humanitarian need. I just recently completed my fellowship training at Beth Israel at Harvard Medical School. And the course I completed was disaster medicine. And I think what's really, it's a great course. It teaches us how to lead in difficult circumstances all over the world, be it a leadership, be it flooding or typhoons or other humanitarian causes. And I'm very fortunate to have this humanitarian leadership as well, compassionate leadership. In disaster medicine, we learn something called crisis leadership. But I have to tell you, whenever I lead in crisis leadership, the humanitarian leadership or compassionate leadership. On how to do things and, you know, thinking about the bigger picture rather than here's some water, here's a sandwich, take care. There's more than that. The human being focusing on humanity really has helped my mission.
We all, that's an amazing epiphany, I would call it, that we can all learn from. I'm really curious, Rajiv, you said you when you got there, you had no plan. And what happened since you got there? Do you have colleagues? Do you have any sort of organization? Where are you geographically? Tell us a little bit more about your story.
Absolutely. So we're at a border called Medica. That's where the first need medical needs were, refugee medicine over there. We moved into Lviv, and that will be the westernmost, the biggest city on the west. Once again, that was refugee medicine. We worked out of a train station. We had a very close bomb shelter over there. So if things went wrong, we were rushed into the shelters. So that was really important. Wherever we practiced it, we had a proper shelter. But we practiced refugee medicine in Lviv. And it was a great experience. These are very similar experiences I had when I worked with Doctors Without Borders. I'm fortunate to have those experiences. And it's good in one way, but it's not satisfying, Laurel, I have to be honest with you. I mean, we're only a very temporary fix. So often people have left their homes without medications and they're just running for their lives, looking to find safety. And we don't often have, you know, a 2-week supply or a 1-month supply. The things that we have in our clinic, this is very early on, we take donations from all over the world. So we get medicines from Israel, Germany, Europe. And first of all, for us, the struggle starts with translating what this is. It's not easily translated. Different countries use different doses. It was challenging to us because, you know, it's not easy. Literally, it's a temporary fix. When one is diagnosed with high blood pressure, they have to take a blood pressure pill forever, really, a low salt diet, and they need their medications. The synergy of those two factors is what keeps someone's blood pressure under control. It's a very temporary fix. We would give them 3 days. Most of the times they don't come back, and we are worried what happened to this person. Infectious diseases were terrible. We had resistant tuberculosis, which Ukraine and Russia actually has the highest number of resistant tuberculosis all over the world. Resistant tuberculosis is treated for sometimes 15 months or so. And they had no places to go because their primary care offices were closed. So what would happen to these people? We don't know. And we see them once most of the time, and they keep traveling. And we hear about stories, you know, what's going on with the medical situation, but very difficult circumstances. And although people call me and say, you're doing a great job, you can never really feel satisfied at the end of the day. I mean, we do the best we can, but to be quite frank with you, it was a lot of patchwork early in the war to just kind of keep things going. But there's a huge need. We really need to get better on this. The country needs more funding. We need to get better on this. But I'm here. I'm ready to fight for these people. Ukraine has become a home to me, sort of, in many ways. I refer to when I say our people, I mean our Ukrainians. It's we've gone through this long journey. It's been 8 months now. And unfortunately, Laurel, I have to be honest, coming into this situation into November, it very much feels like what we had in March. The cold is, it's so frigid over here, the darkness, early evenings. And it's sort of that feel. We still have our missile raids. We're still going to the bunkers for safety. It really, the feel is what I had when it was March, unfortunately. So it's really the heart and soul of the people, along with myself, it really feels like we're going backwards in many ways.
Could you tell us a little bit about what a typical day would look like for you, Rajiv, and how you help yourself to stay so positive?
Of course, Laurel. So my work is twofold, really. The first thing I started, like I mentioned, we were doing refugee medicine. And then in the month of April, I was asked to consult in a town called Bucha. Bucha is a wealthy suburb of Kyiv. And the world saw a lot of these footage of this place where bodies were on the road, just many rape cases. And the first case I saw was 13 years old. A 13-year-old girl, although, of course, we had many boys raped as well. But I just stood in the background. I didn't want to make the patient feel uncomfortable. I didn't speak the language. I just merely watched. And it was unbelievably shocking. And that's what really changed my course in Ukraine. Up until then, I was functioning with refugee medicine. I worked with the Ministry of Defense with providing medical facilities to the eastern part of Ukraine, Kharkiv, which is where I'm at right now, very close to the Russian border, probably less than 100 miles from the border. So that's where we were sending our medical supplies. A lot of generous people in the U.S., I have to be very honest there. Their hearts are big, they've supplied, sent us a lot of stuff. But in April, I realized this is my calling. And in medicine or disaster medicine, we learn to pivot. My specialty is not psychology by any means, but I realized this is going to be a big problem in Ukraine. Ukraine has had a very bad problem with psychiatry issues in the past, pre-existing to the war. What happens here is there's a severe stigma, unlike the United States, where we start to talk about this, to talk about mental health, and it's okay to have depression. It's not okay to have depression over here. You're quickly labeled, and many times if you see a psychiatrist, there's only one diagnosis, which is schizophrenia. And this harms your job, applications in the future and things of that. So this is, I realized this was a problem before the war. And now with the war going on, I mean, I knew this was going to be a big problem. So I started focusing on mental health. I discussed the initiative with some of the people of Ministry of Defense, and they liked the idea. They actually gave us space for free. They said, this is where you can practice. It's in the central part of the city where many people will have access. And then we started. We have our we had to have local psychologists in order for the people to feel comfortable. And we have international psychologists as well. So we have our discussions. And it's not to say, hey, I'm teaching you or you're teaching us. It's a matter of like, how do we do the best thing for the patient? So some of the patients that we have are patients with gender-based violence, children who have seen so much of trauma. Many of them still don't even talk much. They just come there, they just look dazed. And of course, soldiers. The soldiers on the front lines, just because of the shortage of soldiers, a lot of times they are brought into the hospital, treated with their physical injuries, and taken back, ordered to go back to the field to fight, not focusing on what their mental status is. Are they ready to fight? So this has become our focus with Chiraj. And we started our first clinic in Kyiv, the capital, which has become the gold standard. We have just started our second clinic in Kharkiv. This poses a different challenge altogether. So I'm shuttling around different parts of the country. for example, like I said, there's no one role, and your role changes every single day. For example, my role tomorrow morning would be to head to a place called Kherson. They were recently liberated. They have no food. They have no power. They have no electricity. So that is the challenge that was posed to me about 36 hours ago. I said, Rajiv, we have this problem here. What do we do? Yes, let's do this. We need blankets. We need water. We need fresh bread. Let's start gathering the supplies. So the day is, it's variable. So I would just be going different parts of the country. So one day I would be in a clinic. 2 days later, I'll be on the road heading to these sites. And that's what we do as disaster medicine specialists. We pivot based on the situation. We have to change our day, our schedule, and that's how it goes in Ukraine.
And how do you take care of yourself? I know you're taking care of a lot of other people, but how do you take care of your own mental health and your own physical health when you're doing all these things? What's your secret?
Let me be honest with you. For starters, I'm a very happy individual. For starters, I'm so content in life. I have purpose. And I think these are two very important things to have when you wake up in the morning. It's when I wake up at 5:30 in the morning in New York, I'd probably be thinking about a patient when I wake up, say, I wonder how this patient is doing. Like, how's he responding? It's the same feeling over here. It doesn't matter where this is, whether it's Ukraine or New York City, it's the same situation. I wonder how this patient is doing. And that curiosity, and really, like I said, I feel I'm privileged to practice medicine. So that just gives me, you know, a sense of joy. I did my schooling, some of my medical schooling in India, where we're used to seeing these large populations, you know, and you have to time your patient, how long you can spend, various challenges. And once in a while, what I've started doing, Laurel, is initially it was here. I was here like every single day. But now I go to Poland for a few days, sometimes to for a weekend. It's just across the border, just to refresh myself, really just to get a hotel room and just look around, breathe some fresh air. And that's really enough for me. Sitting down and thinking, meditating, just trying to shut the world out for a couple of days is great. I had a wonderful opportunity where I had a week off. I visited Kyoto in Japan, which is just magical for me. It was just a great place to meditate, to learn. And that's my vacations. If I take some time off, or rather what I call prophylactic mental health breaks. Mm-hmm. I know this exists, and a lot, I don't feel that I need this break. I feel like I can go on, but you know, since I'm here for the long haul, I realize it's probably the right thing to do. So I will take this prophylactic mental health break, even though I feel I don't need it a lot of times. So I'll ensure that I go out, leave the country for a few days, and just recharge my batteries and come back. And I've seen that really helps me a lot. When I come back, I'm even more energetic.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're doing that for yourself and for your patients and for everyone who's around you. So how can we help? How can our readers and our listeners help you, help the Ukrainian people, help children? What can we do?
So I thank you for your generous question. It's really food and water is the most important thing this winter. Essentially, I feel the strategy of the enemy has changed, where now they focus on attacking critical infrastructure, where there are power shortages. That leads to water shortages. There's also water shortages as well. All of a sudden, people are drinking water, which is contaminated. Infectious diseases happen. Food and water is the absolute basic. And the next high priority thing for me is really blankets. Of course, in a perfect world, we'd be able to help the people with heaters and things of that. But may not be practical. So blankets is a huge need. And like I always add this human touch, which children are very important to me. And I always like, there's nothing like seeing a child smile. And for the first two toy drives that we did, I can't tell you the number of smiles or number of parents that actually, you know, they, some other sent a translation and it came to me how happy they were to see a child smile. So in a very simple way, I would really like people to support our toy drive. Very important. People may not think about it so much in the States, but it's that human touch, which is what makes us compassionate leaders, to think outside the box, to think beyond, okay, here's your aid or anything like that. But what really makes children jump up would be a candy bar or a toy. And that's what makes us compassionate leaders. So that's what I would ask for our people, food, water, and toys in any way they can contribute. They just have to email me. It's rajeev@chiraj.org, R-A-J-E-E-V. At chiraj.org. And anything at all. I'm not picky or anything like that. Anything in any format would definitely help these people.
So spell Chiraj for us.
Of course. It's C-H-I-R-A-J.
Okay. So we email you, rajeev@chiraj.com.
Chiraj.org. And of course, they can visit our website. At chiraj.org.
Okay. And either way, we can help you with your toy drive and find out ways to donate other things as well.
The happiest thing I would do really is the toy drive.
Okay.
To be very honest with you, children are just forgotten, and they have so many psychological problems with really not going to school, not interacting with other children. Terrible, terrible. We see depression and PTSD in our children very often. And the problem over here, Laurel, is this: in medicine, we say remove the source of the problem, like an infection. Take out the abscess, take out the collection, treat the heart valve. But here, the source is ongoing. That is the problem with psychology, psychiatry in Ukraine. The problem is everyone, when they go to bed at night, they do not know whether they'll wake up or alive in the morning. The first thing Ukrainians do is they call their loved ones to check whether they're safe, alive. And that's the problem. Even though we treat the depression, this ongoing depression and anxiety is really the problem. So that the same thing with children, rushed in and out of bomb shelters. And that would really be the best thing for me, to give these children something to smile about during these horrific, wretched conditions.
Well, we will send you a gift for a child from everyone on my team, and we're going to promote this, and we're going to help you. It's a great time to get people's attention on this. Any particular ages? Is it like 0 to 18, or what is the age?
The focus is really 0 to 15. I think around that age, they're heading out to the army as well. So I think 0 to 15 is a fantastic age to focus
on. Okay. We will certainly help you with that. It'll be our honor and joy to help you with that.
Wonderful. I can't thank you enough for having me today.
Well, I can't thank you enough. And, I've just learned, some basic things here that I've heard from what you've said is having a calling can get you through so many things that are difficult. And that's what one of the things I've dedicated my life to is helping people understand that having a calling and having a purpose is so powerful. And it can really propel you through a lot of things that are difficult. So thank you for being a model with that. I appreciate that despite having a calling, you're taking good care of yourself and taking little breaks, because I also know from my working with a lot of people that even when you have a calling, you have to understand that the the shadow of a calling is workaholism, and that you are human. And so taking breaks, meditating, taking care of yourself is really important. I appreciate.
Yeah, thank you, Laurel. And I think we're out of that era where, you know, glorifying overwork is, we have to get out of that. I mean, there's people are just glorified because they're overworking.
I think we also don't understand the link between workaholism and mental health. Because I work with a lot of people that are struggling because we sometimes glorify overworking. And it can create problems. So everyone needs to have a balance. And I am so happy and honored that you got to be with us today. And we will we'll also put this on our website. We're doing some things for children for the holidays, and we will highlight your story. This will also be at a Forbes.com post, and I appreciate again the listeners sharing this time with us. It's been so beautiful. So let's go to chiraj.org, chiraj.org, and help Rajiv and the people of Ukraine. So thank you for being with me today.
It's an absolute honor, and I've learned so much from you and from the circle, and we're always learning, so it's really an honor to talk to you, because I've learned so much from you as well. Thank you, Laurel, for your inspiration.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.